Hello and welcome to the Smart Beauty Podcast. I'm your host, Viola Levy, beauty journalist and founder of copy-led branding agency, Smart Beauty Creative. We're here to create your brand voice and craft the story behind it. Welcome back for part two of my conversation with the incredible Rhea Cartwright. In this episode, we dive deeper into her time as head of beauty buying at Liberty, where she shares invaluable insights about what it takes to stand out in a competitive market. Hint, storytelling is a big factor. And most importantly, Rhea reveals the best way to get your products in front of beauty buyers like herself. So if you're dreaming of a retail partnership, this is the episode you cannot afford to miss. And don't forget to go back and listen to episode one if you haven't already. Let's get into it. Going back to your time at Liberty, obviously your career journey, as we've discussed, hasn't been linear, and you've done sort of worn lots of different hats. So without having sort of come up through the traditional beauty buying route, how did that affect your approach and your criteria that you used when deciding who to stock?
Oh, okay. I didn't know what the question was going to be. I was going to say, well, it was bloody hard, you know, in terms of the tech, there's a huge technical side of being a beauty buyer that probably, unless you're a buyer, you just don't realize. And, you know, I had to make it very clear to everybody, even like some of the systems that they use. I was like, guys, I don't know how to use these things. And then my boss just said, you don't ever need to learn them. Somebody else will do it for you. If you want to see a report, ask them to run it. So I was like, thank gosh. In terms of the criteria for the brands, quite honestly, it was no different to how I would select it for myself, or if I were creating an edit for, you know, a piece. For me, the criteria of any product is I want it to feel either new or fresh or just exciting. I don't like seeing things, again, I guess I've used the word homogenous quite a lot, but things that feel like I've already seen it, but it's just a very slight variation, because that's not enough for me. You know, and hear people say that, oh, I wanted to create a brand with sustainability as its main pillar. And then you see the product and it's literally this, it's like a copied version of something else. And I'm like, your most sustainable option would have been to just not launch a brand. I also always look for great founders, you know, in the same way that when you're an investor, you quite often care more about the team and the founder more than the product, especially again at an early stage. It's because for me, I was like, well, a founder, especially if it's a small indie brand, a founder that maybe we're there, either their first or second retailer. Again, if I could think of brands like Mirror Water, Rome, we were both their second retailers. So these founders aren't experienced founders, but they're building killer brands. And I need to, in the same way that, yes, fine, at Liberty, I wasn't investing my personal money or money from a fund. We are investing the business's money. We're investing time and our energy on a very, very, a very kind of small resource team. So I've got to believe that when, you know, maybe we're in the trenches because, you know, markets shift and decline and go through, you know, peaks and troughs, that the founders are also willing to weather that storm with us, and fundamentally can weather that storm on their own for their own business, because they've still got to show up. And I think that, you know, for me, that's also, I think, selfishly, the thing I most love about brands is the founder. I love hearing the story, because, you know, storytelling is kind of the key part of it. There's so many brands out there. The ones that are always the most successful aren't always the ones with the best formulas or the best products. Sometimes they are. And actually, I would almost say that a lot of time they are. The brands that win are the brands that can create fantastic stories, either through copy or visual stories or community stories. Of course, I would also just preface that to do all of those things very, very well, you do need money. And I think it also means that there is a slightly Well, it's that's I guess that's just life, but a slightly unfair playing field that some brands have buckets of cash and some don't. But I think ensuring that there is a high level of storytelling is so crucial because fundamentally, why should a customer pick your serum versus somebody else's? Why should someone that's used a face cream for 10 plus years and maybe it's been, you know, maybe it's been passed on to her, that ritual from her mother or her grandmother, now use your face cream? The way to almost usurp it is all through the storytelling.
And do you think brands that, as you say, don't have as much money, that they're kind of new and like new startups, do you think it's worth them leaning into that and leaning into the fact that they're the underdog? Because people love a triumph over adversity story, not trying to be the next Glossier or Drunk Elephant, but saying, look, we're here, we're small, you know, this is who we are and this is what we're doing.
I mean, what I do think about, you know, you mentioned, kind of trends post-COVID is that this notion of wanting to support independent businesses, I think definitely exists. So does that always translate to beauty? Sometimes. I say sometimes because fundamentally people buy any product to look and feel better in some capacity. So if the product has got great storytelling, yes, they're a stunning independent business, but the product is not as efficient as generic brand XYZ, then people aren't going to buy it. But for sure, I think that, you know, knowing that you're supporting an independent individual versus a conglomerate, I think is very attractive for a lot of people because it makes you, our spending power has so much power. Where we put our pounds or our dollars or our euros or whatever currency you use in your country is there's so much weight to that. And there are people behind these brands. And I think that's why, you know, a strong founder-led brand, founders that can lean into their own stories and their own experience are so interesting because it's a person rather than a faceless brand. You know, just to use an example, I have nothing against Clinique or Clarins. I mean, Clarins, a family
Yeah,
business, independent, but
I get where
let's
you're
say,
heading here.
you know what I'm
Yeah.
saying? It's just that, like, you know, Clinique, I mean, to be honest, I would say that actually Clinique does have quite a strong emotional tie because I think of Clinique and like my grandmother, I think of Clinique three-step system, you know, so
Good old
innovative
three
in so
step.
many ways, right? Good old three-step. Or, you know, I remember my grandma buying me Clinique Happy when I was a child, like when I was in primary school.
Oh, wow.
And it came with I was the only grandchild at the time. So, and I was the only girl and I was very
I'll say no
spoiled.
more.
And it would, right? Like literally, she honestly was probably the gateway to this whole thing for me, quite frankly. But it would come with a gift with purchase, and that would then become like my school bag. I mean, it was just joyous. But you see, maybe like a Clinique of now with their storytelling versus, I don't know, Skin Rocks or even like an Estee Lauder, Mirror Water from Estee Lalonde. Well, there's for sure going to be more emotional ties with either Mirror Water or Skin Rocks because you can relate it back to a person. Like Clinique, there's no person to tie it back to. And I think people forget, like, we're humans. So there's a huge element of psychology and why we buy what we buy and who we relate to and what brands we relate to. And I don't think that that's often extrapolated enough. What I will say is that obviously there are lots of brands that, you know, people often say to me, I want to launch a brand, but I don't want to be the face of it. I get that a lot. You know, how do I navigate? I've got great ideas, I've got great connections, but I don't want to be front and center. And I'm like, well, still go for it because you just have to be smart with your storytelling because if it's not centered around you and you don't want to show up for it in that way publicly. And again, not that you sort of have any obligation to. I think as well, some people aren't great at being public facing.
No, like I was going to
And I
say,
think
being
that.
a brand ambassador is a completely separate job in of itself. Like being an influencer is a
Exactly.
completely separate job,
Exactly.
and people kind of don't,
Exactly.
take that into account a lot.
No. No. There's a brand that I'm definitely not going to say their name. But there's a brand that I can think of where their founder is so front and center, and I'm like, it's for sure it's putting people off. The other thing is that if the founder
Really?
is front and center, because it's just like, for some people, and again, it's that expression, right? Different strokes for different folks. So some things people are going to do that, a certain percentage are going to absolutely love and thrive. I always think to myself, well, not everybody loves Beyonce. Not everybody loves Taylor Swift. It doesn't matter if they've got, the Beehive and Swifties or whatever. They don't appeal to everybody. And it's the same with brands and therefore brand founders. It's okay if people don't like you. Like this whole thing of we're for everybody, like, no, you're not, and that's okay. You don't have to be everybody's cup of tea. But I think it's really if people actually, don't want to be the face, or like you said, that almost like that ambassador, or they don't want to build a personal brand, then don't. There's no, just because it's for sure become a big, not even trend, it should maybe, I think it has happened organically with, again, with the rise of social media. You can still create huge. There are so many brands that are absolutely huge that nobody knows who the founder is. I think most, I was talking to somebody recently. It's the a guy called Nadir, who's the founder of Indie Beauty Expo. And we had a really frank chat. And it's like, we talk about ingredients and this and that. Consumers, of which we all are, ultimately don't really care what's in the product as long as it gives us the desired results. So I always, and this is a joke, but jokingly say, it could have, crushed up kitten dust in a face cream. People would probably still buy it. And people are like, oh no, they wouldn't. And I'm like, you forget how vain people are. You forget. And again, I think that that almost comes down to not them being vain, it's the standards that are pushed on us. But among all the toot, there are some absolute gems. And I think we're so lucky to live in a time where there is such a broad spectrum of product. There's such a broad spectrum of what beauty is. And frankly, the widening of the standards, and which is it a, is it, it's at a far more inclusive space now than, even 5 years ago, let alone 50. And I think that's fantastic. And honestly, like, long may that continue.
I mean, given that you say all the tut that is out there, do you think there are any gaps in the market where you think brands are missing a trick?
Yeah, I mean, I don't. There are so many gaps. It's more, I think, a thing of is the, but, for me, the people that have so much power in the industry are beauty, senior beauty editors, because they very much influence what a customer will buy, because they will read it in a magazine, and also the beauty buyer is the second person, and I don't think much is spoken about how, because if a brand goes into a retailer, especially a prestigious one, it's like the ultimate co-signing. The a buyer, you literally decide what the products that a customer can shop. So because of conversations that we've had already today in terms of the fact that, well, some of the buy, you have to have a really strong sense of commercial acumen. I would almost say that a lot of, this is maybe rude for me to say this, but a lot of beauty buyers aren't, and almost beauty editors are quite lazy. They want products to arrive at their desks rather than them hunting them out. Very, very rarely, if I'm being completely honest, do I hear of either beauty directors that are of a very kind of senior and, very experienced, and similarly with buyers, where they are on the hunt. And I think that maybe because they're tired, or again, because, well, probably also, well, because they're busy, quite frankly.
Busy
But
getting
I
taken
think
out for
if you,
breakfast by luxury
yeah.
brands. But we won't go there. That's a whole nother
Yeah, we
podcast.
were, let's not, I don't want to be blacklisted. But I think, part of being in this industry is trying to find the next big thing. And that's what I love to do. I've always loved, I remember I'd be like 19 And I did French and Spanish at university. So unrelated to the industry in the slightest. And in my spare time, I would read, this is not even a joke, personal care trend reports from South America. So I genuinely remember, reading this report about how the personal care trends were shifting in, like Chile and Ecuador. Why am I reading that at 19? God knows, but I found it fascinating. And I just think if you lose the curiosity, then we won't even, the brands that are filling the gap, we won't even see them because they'll never get the airtime. And they need the airtime to drive sales to then maybe get investment or to then, or to maybe get a feature or for them, an influencer. Because even influencers, again, this is such a blanket statement, but they're busy. They are busy doing their jobs, creating content, running businesses on the side. Again, some of them are, mothers as well, whatever they're doing. So what should it be also their job to go out and hunt to find the next best thing? As well, if you're being sent the best, the perceived best of the best, let me be careful what I say. If you're being sent a package after package of the best-selling products, you don't really have much incentive to go and find something new because why would you? And also all of those brands anyway are launching so many new products, 3 to 4 times a year, that to find a new brand doing a new thing, frankly, isn't high on your priority list, which again goes back to why we keep seeing the same brands being spoken about time and time and time again. And it's, I think for consumers, it's just my perception, and maybe that's differently. What for me is so interesting is we live in a time where we've got the most amount of information and access to information we have ever had, right? We've got the internet and social media. Again, some of it's obviously misinformation, but still the most amount of content and education we have ever had. And yet I would say that I would imagine that consumers, because of the sheer amount of brands that have launched in the last five-ish years, are more confused than ever.
100%, because it's just so
I think
overwhelming, isn't
that,
it?
yeah, exactly. It's so overwhelming. It's intimidating. I don't think that many retailers do a great job at the education side anymore. I think that as well because of the fact that, you've got, London living wage is frankly laughable. So for people that work on the shop floor, which is a hard bloody graft, I work shop floor beauty retail for probably full time, 5 to 6 years. I remember asking somebody, actually, it was somebody at Liberty, but they're not there anymore. And I was like, "Oh, did you ever work on the shop floor?" And she was like, "Oh, yeah, I did." And I was like, "Oh, but, oh no!" It was like, "Well, I was a Saturday girl," and I was like, "Oh, okay," because you're a Saturday girl, whereas I was like properly doing. I worked like Christmas Eve, Boxing Day. Like, if you've done a stock take for a beauty brand, is hell. Where you've got like every single thing looks the same, and you're like, how many of crushed amethyst do we have, or whatever the eyeshadow net? Like, it's horrible. Or working, I worked Boxing Day in Harrods. It was kind of fun, but I was like, I would much rather be at home eating a mince pie. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I did Boxing
And I
Day at
think,
M&S, and it was a similar thing.
oh God, and also the people coming and just looking for a bargain, so they're picking up everything and saying, this on offer, and it's like, no, only the things indicated are on offer. And I guess the issue now is honestly is finding a lot of problems that brands are having now, actually. Well, not, it's bizarrely finding great staff, finding great shop floor staff, people that are in like so passionate about a brand, have great customer service, potentially have, the technical skills if they're working for a makeup brand, or maybe they're a facialist or a spa-led brand. Finding great people to work for, £8, £9 an hour is bloody hard, because who wants to do that for £8 or £9 an hour? You know what I'm saying? So what happens is you go into certain retail stores or certain beauty retailers that have great product, but a really crap experience. It's like a very non-uniform experience. You could go to, and I guess I will say names, but ignore the locations because it doesn't matter. You could go to a Space NK in Henley versus Space NK Duke of York Square, and have a vastly different experience. I remember going into the Duke of York Square store once. It was, I'd actually come from the organic pharmacy across the road. So it was like mid-morning, let's say half 11 a.m. And it was a Tuesday or a Wednesday. There was no joke about 8 to 10 members of staff. I was in there for probably 45 minutes and I bought some makeup. Not one of them spoke to me. I didn't have earphones, not even a hello, by the way,
Wow.
which back in my day, to sound like an old woman, you could never get away with that. Like you, that just the concept of seeing a customer walk in and you not greeting them at the very least, let alone saying, do you want some help? Just a, hi, how are you today? Not like, do you need some help? Like, because I'll probably say no to the help. But for you to not even say, hi, welcome, hi, how are you, is crazy. And I think that's the problem with the experiences now in a lot of the retail stores. And I think that's why people, you know, I love beauty retail. It's my favorite thing. You know, you go in store, whether you're going to be buying or not, and you just have fun. You're playing, you're spritzing, you're swatching, you're smelling. It's just such a sensual, fun experience. And creating those experiences for people and for customers is something that I also love doing. But the experiences are underpinned by the staff. If you, you can have the best experience or the best idea for an experience, if you don't have great people, I guess, leading the experience, then the experience doesn't stand. It's like, I always think if you go to a restaurant, if I go to a restaurant and have the best food I've ever had, but the serving staff are miserable or are rude, I will be disappointed. Whereas if I go to a place where the food is kind of subpar, but I have a fantastic service, that to me is more, that to me is more of a win. That to me is more interesting.
It's the idea of being looked after, isn't it? And just being kind of taken care of.
That's it. That you've literally, you've hit the nail on the head. It's let us look after you. Let us take care of you. And that's what retail, especially beauty retail, and especially luxury beauty retail should be. It's you've left your house, you've come to us out of all the other stores you could have gone to. And it's that thing almost like in Beauty and the Beast, like be our guest, be our guest. Whilst you're in our store, call me Lumiere because I'm going to look after you so much that you're going to want to come back time and time again. You're going to want to come back to me specifically because I have given you a level of service that you've never had before. When I meet those people, because they do exist, but they're just like needles in haystacks, I'm very appreciative because it's, I think passion in any industry goes really far.
Definitely. We're almost at the end of our time, but I was going to ask, obviously there are so many small brands out there that would just, you know, that would be their dream to get in front of somebody like yourself and to get their brand stocked in Liberty. What are the best ways of going about it? And when you mentioned about having great storytelling,
that's the hardest thing, isn't it, is how do you get, you know, the amount of emails that people get a day is that, you know, ultimately whilst I was at Liberty, I didn't have time to speak to most people, even some of our partners. I didn't have the time, and I was explicitly told by my direct, by my boss at the time, you just only focus on the top 20 to 30 brands and let your buyer, so the woman underneath me, deal with the rest. Because ultimately as well, the top 20, 30 brands make up all of the revenue. The other 150 brands, the revenue they're bringing in is marginal. And you know, you think of the size of business of a Le Labo of a Dip or of a Diptyque versus a brand that's just launched, has got one SKU. You know, we're talking millions versus potentially, you know, 25-30k, which again, a brand taking 25-30k is not successful in beauty retail. Like that's if you don't change things quickly, you're going to be cut. The best way to get in front, I think, is, I don't actually know what my advice is, to be really honest. I think it's just by chance. I think what I would say is don't give up. If you've sent one email and you've not responded back, I say this to everybody. And even now people email me and they say, hey, I'm trying to email them, they're not responding, and I'm like, they're really busy. I think step one is just being really tenacious, and secondly, having empathy for the fact that these people are so busy. I want to say this explicitly, right? The sizes of beauty buying teams relative to the size of the business is insane. So you have got certain cases, and I will speak very specifically for myself at Liberty. We had, I think, six of us in the team. Now, at the same time, whilst I was there, I was also working on and building an entire new fragrance lounge, which meant onboarding 30 new brands that involved, negotiating and pitching to probably 60 or 70 brands to say, can you join us in this new space? So six of us looking after 100, there is so much admin involved in 180 brands, you cannot even believe. So if your email hasn't been opened or responded to, it's probably just because there is a priority and you're not it yet. So I tell everybody, just be patient. I think that if you can, a DM sometimes can go a long way if they're receptive to that. I don't, again, don't expect it, but I think what I personally like about a DM is that I can check out your brand very quickly. And I used to always tell everybody that whenever, regardless of kind of the whatever kind of hats I have worn on a professional level, as soon as I'm sent a deck or a brand website, I go to the Instagram straight away because the Instagram tells me more than a website can. I can understand maybe who the community is. I can understand, how their approach to things. So a DM is sometimes quite nice because then I think someone can see not just the product, but also who the community is. And the other thing I would say is just be smart. So if you know that the whether it's a buyer or a journalist or an investor, whoever it is going to be talking at an event, at a conference, go and book a ticket, or and say and you know and try and not pounce on them, but see if at the end you can go up and say, hey, it was so nice to hear you speak. By the way, I'm so and so. Like, go, just do the in real life thing. I think people forget that, like, there are so many events and conferences, and if I want to find someone, best believe I'll find them. You know what I'm saying? And I think that,
Track
like,
them
people
down.
forget that, like, yeah, like I will track you down somehow, especially if they're in the country. And even as I told you, when I met the guy from Indie Beauty Expo, I sent him a DM. He didn't know me. Sent him a DM. I knew people that work there because I've written for the publication, but he did not know who I was. And I was like, I want to come to this conference. And I actually said, can I have a ticket for free? And he said, no. I said, okay, that's a bit annoying, but I get it. It was like a £1,500 ticket. And then he was like, but I am going to be doing meetings on Wednesday if you want a coffee. I said, I'll be there. Of course, I'm going to be there. Like, and I think, again, it's that thing of, if you're going to go to a meeting to someone, say, I say to people, I will come to you. I will come to your office. Tell me what your favorite coffee is. I will bring it to you. Like, I don't think people honestly, I think when you run your own business or you have your own brand, that is, of course, your priority. But if you're trying to email, again, a beauty buyer or a beauty editor or a potential investor, you're not their priority, as rude as that might sound. You're just not. They're dealing with their other projects. So, whatever you can do to mitigate any hassle or faff, do it.
Is it
If you
worth
can
door
see on their
stepping them, or
Instagram.
is that too much? Like coming up, turning up at their offices, is that a bit
No,
extreme?
please don't do that. I
Oh,
have also had that happen to me.
really?
And people would send product to the offices, but like some of it was huge products to the offices, or they would send, flowers. Sometimes I wouldn't be in the office. So I would say that, and I did say this. I did a talk at the Coty annual conference in the summer, and someone said, how can we get buyers to essentially treat our brands better? And I did say, listen, flattery and gifts goes a long way. And I think they thought I was joking, and I was like, no, I'm not joking, because the brands with the huge, huge budgets when it comes to so at Christmas, the beauty buyers will get gifted from the brands, like little thank yous, but some of those little thank yous aren't that little. So, you'll be sent chocolates, bottle of champagne, products, whatever. And I'm like, If your brand has the budget to send a beautiful, personalized gift, then send it. Because they're going to remember. They're going to be like, wow, look at this. And again, it's something, the thing that people probably don't ever speak about. It sounds a bit uncouth to say, send a great gift. But you imagine when you receive a great gift from a friend or a
Yeah,
family
everyone loves
member,
princess treatment, right? Everyone likes that
exactly,
being
you
made to feel
feel
special.
special. Yeah. So if it's within your means, do something that makes them feel special. And I think that, though, again, it's almost like those human touches really do go a long way. You might send them a bunch of flowers that are stunning and they still might not like the brand. Fine. Again, you're not for everybody. There'll be another brand, another retailer, another editor that will love you. But you've got to try. And I think people are quite often so hyper fixated on it being, let's meet up for it in real life coffee. Let's go for a lunch. First of all, I personally hate lunches. I either want to eat or I want to talk. I can't eat and talk. So the idea of having a meeting over lunch for me personally is hell. I love a let's if it's not raining and it's kind of sunny, let's go for a walk in a park. And a coffee and a chat, or we go to a gallery where it's warm and it's private and we can look at art and be inspired whilst also having a really fluid conversation. But to be just sat opposite someone, especially somebody new, I personally don't love it. Also, if you say art gallery, you also look very cultured, which I think is quite nice. But I just think it alleviates any pressure if it is awkward or if you kind of there's always something to talk about. Or again, it could be, I met somebody recently and we went for a walk in a beauty hall and that was really nice. So, it's Emily Bullman. She's an investor at Jam Jar. And we'd already kind of, we'd met virtually, but we'd not had an in real life and our schedules were a bit nuts. So let's just walk around Selfridges for 45 minutes. And again, it was great because we managed to talk about us, but we were also, being inspired by what was in front of us. So I just think there's no real answer to get in front of someone. You've just got to keep knocking at the door. And I think as well, I think the most important thing, I think, for people that are like, well, I've tried, it's still not working. You're going to get a lot more no's than yeses, and that's the nature of life. Any brand, whether it's beauty, tech, whatever it is, any brand that has been of major significance or success at some point got a lot of no's. And when you're in it yourself, you don't remember that. But I think it's important to remember the amount of rejection that happens until it flips over until success
Yeah,
is
it makes it all the more
huge.
sweeter. I know people go on about
Exactly.
like confidence being the key to everything, but I don't agree. I think it's not about obviously confidence is important. It's good, but I think it's more about grit. It's about patience. Because I've known the most confident people that fall at the first hurdle. It's not just about that. It's about
100%.
having grit and having that sort of endurance that you can kind of get told no
That's
and have
it. It's
so many doors slammed in your
it's
face.
endurance because ultimately it is a numbers, it's a numbers game. If you only ask five people and all of them say no, then that's a statistically speaking, it's not very successful. But if you ask 50 people and 40 say no, technically it's still not very successful, but 10 have said yes. So what are you going to fixate on? The 40 that said no or the 10 that said yes? And I think there's this kind of, I don't know, probably some like Twitter tech bro that's, or someone that's always like, you should count your rejections, not your yeses or something. But it's the concept of your goal when when you've got an ask or when you want to do something should almost be based on, I want to get as many no's as possible because it means that I've been asking a sufficient amount of people.
That's a good way of looking at
And I
it.
think if, you know what I'm saying, like if you think you're going to be able to just, all of a sudden become the number one brand or be placed in the number one retailer and you've only asked three people, honestly, honey, just try harder.
Yeah, if that easy, like everyone would do it. It's the fact that only a few, get to that
Exactly.
place, get to that
Exactly.
And what's next for you? Like, what's before we head off, what is your like next project and what have you got kind of coming up in the pipeline?
Next product. So I'm working with two very, very exciting clients right now. One is, I say, my best friend's brand, Wild Source. So female founder based in Bristol. She's already in Liberty, was in Harrods, is going into Babington, is next year further expanding into some more luxury retailers, which I can't say yet. So that's exciting and it's fun and it feels like family because she's a friend of mine. I'm also working with an amazing French entrepreneur called Marina Camus, who is launching a beauty accelerator. She's got a supply chain background, like very experienced supply chain background, which is very rare to have that kind of person launch a brand. It's normally, someone that's in sales or marketing or the perceived sexy side, and there is nothing sexy about supply chain. But what it does mean is that she's a genius because she's thinking about demand planning and forecasting in numbers in a way that honestly most typical founders and CEOs or kind of self titled CEOs, to make it very clear, don't often think about. So I don't want to say kind of what the kind of initial brand coming out of that is, but it's great having that perspective and building something that I really believe could be a hugely successful entity. And then on personal, I guess my non-clients, I'm always kind of talking to brands and founders, lots of public speaking things happening. Lots of exciting projects that I probably can't speak about, but I guess everything I've done is just so broad. And like, we spoke at the beginning because I've always been very, very clear about what I stand for, what I don't stand for. I feel very blessed with opportunities that come my way because 99% out of the time, they're very aligned with me. So I don't have to do a lot of kind of, oh, sorry, not this time, but and I just feel like I'm transparently, when you've gone through some kind of life stuff, it's been quite nice to be like, you know what, actually, I would like a bit of a break for a little bit. I my foot was really down, and I had such an insane kind of 4 or 5 years, and with like professionally, and at the same time, some big life things that had happened and, family deaths and all that kind of stuff. So to just be able to take some time to recalibrate and for once not have to think about the what next, just enjoy and be in the moment has been a blessing. But I can, it's been, the last kind of 6, 7 weeks where I can feel this energy and this power and this pace come back. And I'm like, truly, I think my next big thing, I think, will be more based around me, which feels exciting. I'm really trying to create this kind of ecosystem in which my own personal brand continues to bring me opportunities, which hopefully it will. That can also lean into my consulting, and then I really want to launch a investment fund, a micro fund, but I would like to. I'm currently doing a VC accelerator program. And I would like to have a beauty and wellness fund that invests in beauty entrepreneurs of the future, that match my investment thesis. I think that for me, the whole thing with anything is that capital, conversations, and connections are what drive change. And if you're not from certain backgrounds, having access to all three of those things is very hard. You and
Completely.
me, we come from quite similar socioeconomic backgrounds. So, to not have had money growing up at all, frankly, to not come from a family where talking about those kinds of things were normal, you see the difference versus people who are, people that are like, yeah, I just raised, $1 million, or I just raised $250,000. And it's like, it's easy for them because anything's easy once you know how, or you have the
Yeah, they know
connections
the rules of the
to show
game and the
you
lay of
how.
the land. Yeah, they know the
Exactly.
shorthand, and it's
Exactly.
yeah.
Exactly. So I want a fund that will truly invest in brands that I believe I can, that not only have the legs themselves, but that I, with my expertise, with my own network, can propel them even further, but that also will help to bridge some of the disparity between, essentially female women access to capital and to growth. You know, the statistics
Just
in terms
shocking.
of women-led businesses and access to capital is dire. And it's actually in the last year been on a decline, and that has to change. So I'd like a fund.
Definitely. Particularly in our industry where it's like mainly female dominated. I mean, it's insane that there isn't more funding for
Exactly.
founders.
Exactly. It's disgusting.
But yeah, thank you so much, Ria, for being on the podcast. And it's been so lovely chatting
Thank
with
you for
you.
having me.
And I hope you find time to kind of go back into your writing work at some stage as well, because I think you're a beautiful writer and it would be really lovely to see some new
Thank you.
articles
Well, I
coming
want a
out as
book,
well.
actually. So I will put that out there. Yes, on my vision board is a book deal. I don't know what the book would be on.
Oh,
But
fantastic.
I want a book. That's what I want. I want a book.
Yeah, well, heard it here first. Thank you so much. Thanks so much, Ria. And yeah, all the best. Can't wait to hear what you get up to next. Thank you so
Thank
much.
you.
I hope you enjoyed that episode. All links will be in the show notes, and feel free to visit smartbeautycreative.com or visit us over on Instagram to find out more about what we do. And if you enjoyed listening, please don't forget to rate and review Smart Beauty on iTunes, as it helps people find us. See you next time.